What does it take to do something new? A new career, perhaps, or to build something bigger than yourself? What do you need to do in order to keep turning up, even when failure and rejection seem to be the lay of the land? And how much of finding success is about experience and know-how, and how much of it is about attitude, courage, finding the angles that work, and finding the energy to keep showing up, even when you can't face another day? I'm Chris Brock, and this is Conversations on Living, a podcast about being well, doing well, and living well. And today I'm chatting with Kelly Robinson, the founder of the Kelly Robinson team of real estate agents working in New York City. She decided to try a career in real estate when her acting career, which was propped up with other jobs such as bar work, wasn't going in the direction she wanted to. But building something new wasn't just about turning up and working hard. It became about facing failure and keeping on facing it and learning the hard way and still persisting despite all of it until she learned to navigate the landscape and ultimately make it her own. In this conversation, Kelly generously shares her experiences about finding the courage to keep showing up, facing the fear of attempting something that seemed bigger than her, and about setting boundaries and investing in yourself, and taking scary but calculated risks, risks that are vital to building something great. To find out more about Kelly, check her out on Instagram, which is where she is most active, and she can be found at Kelly Robinson New York. And before we get into this conversation, just a quick word about Headliner. Headliner is the app that I use to create audiograms. As I mention every episode of the podcast, they're those little social media sized clips of audio with an image behind them, a little bit of video maybe, a waveform graphic and captions, that sort of thing. They're a great way to market a podcast, and that's why I use them. And certainly Headliner is the most powerful and easiest way to create them. So if you host a podcast, check out Headliner at headliner.app. And also a shout out, as I do every week, to Plane. Plane is the meditation game. So it's if you're into video games and you want to try meditation and mindfulness, it is perhaps the best way to dip your toe in the water. With Plane, you are encouraged to get out there and create a wonderful landscape, just using the power of mindfulness and simple meditation techniques. And you can find it by searching meditation game, and it should be one of the top results. Or you can head over to plane.co, that's playne.co. And also a shout out for this podcast. Just don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get it. And, you know, send us a message if you're liking what you're hearing. Perhaps you'd like something different. What kind of things would you like to hear? And don't forget to tell your friends about it. So we're on all the platforms, all the main ones anyway. And you can also find us at conversationsonliving.com. And that's where you can find all the episodes along with my writing, my meditations, and various other bits. And if you sign up to our newsletter, you get a free tasty download as well. So that's enough waffle from me. Let's get into this conversation with the amazing and inspiring Kelly Robinson. So Kelly, thank you so much for joining me. We've spent a bit of time going backwards and forwards trying to organize this because I really wanted to talk to you about kind of empire building, which is what you're doing essentially in the kind of the American property market. And you're doing hugely well. You're almost something of a well-known figure in the property scene. And I just wanted to get into the kind of the nitty-gritty about how you go about even starting to build such a kind of a great following, such a kind of strong reputation. Because obviously, you know, it takes a lot of confidence. It takes a lot of strategy, thinking ahead, planning ahead. And that can be quite daunting for anyone who isn't necessarily born with those things. So maybe you could start us off, tell us a little bit about your story, what you're doing right now, and how you came here, if that works for you.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm so glad we were able to make it work. So I kind of fell into the real estate industry. I was an actress my entire life growing up, and I think that helps me a lot, and I'll explain why later, but I had a falling out with a manager. I booked a soap. I didn't want to be on a soap. He got pissed. We ended our contract, and I signed a post-dated contract with another manager for a year out, and I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll try something else. I've been doing this my whole life. Maybe I'd rather work during the day. You know, maybe I want to go to the bar instead of be behind the bar. And a friend of mine said, well, why don't you try real estate? I tried PR for a little bit, and I liked marketing things and people and places. And my friend said, "Why don't you try real estate?" And I was like, "Oh, okay." So I got my license, and then I started doing rentals because it's very hard to break into the sales part of the industry at first. So I started doing rentals for a year. I did not do well at all. It was very tough. I think I made $20,000 my first year, which in New York City is not much,
No.
even back in 2005. And then I said, well, I need to break into the sales part of this market. So I found a job as an assistant for a top producing agent in the city. I was her assistant for about a year, and then I moved to an agent on her team. I was with her for 4 years. Then I was with another team for 2 years. And then I went off on my own. And I didn't really want a team because I didn't find that the team leaders that I worked for treated people well. And I was like, you know what? I had a bad taste in my mouth, but I got so busy that I needed to bring more people on. So I ended up kind of forming a team accidentally. And then I had to hire an assistant. And at first I didn't want to give up my income to pay an assistant. And then I just bit the bullet and did it. And I realized, you know what? I make so much more money when I pay somebody to do the things like the admin work so that I can do what I'm good at, which is selling. I think one of the biggest things that you have to overcome in my industry is rejection. And I think I was groomed for that with being an actress my whole life because, you know, you're not tall enough, you're not short enough, you're not fat enough, you're not thin enough. You know, it's like there's always something, and there's always somebody who's better than you or prettier than you or skinnier than you. And there's a lot of rejection, and you just have to pull yourself up and keep going and not take it personally. So, you know, I became relentless, I think, because of that. Not in an obnoxious way because I can't stand pushy salespeople, but just in a sense where I don't give up. And I think that's the key to doing a good job, especially in New York and building a successful business, is you can't give up, you can't get discouraged easily.
How do you keep the faith when you're constantly getting knocked back? I mean, I was freelancing for about 10 years, and one thing that strangely helped me was when someone said, rejection is the landscape, you know, that is the status quo. But
Yeah.
actually it's, you know, so don't get disheartened by every person who turns you down, because actually the wins are when someone says, yes, we will have a meeting, or we will kind of return your calls, or those kind of things. But what keeps you turning up every day when you've had a kind of week of rejections, or a month of rejections? How do you keep
Yeah.
that
I
fire going?
mean, we're all human, right? So sometimes it's hard not to get upset about things like that when it's happening all at once and it's rejection after rejection. But I've learned to not take it personally and to just move on. And also, you know, if there's a listing I don't get, I lose out to another broker or something. I always ask the seller, you know, what was it that differentiated us? And what could I have done better to win your business? And I have no problems asking that question. Sometimes they won't tell me, and sometimes they will. But when they do, many, many times I'm like, oh gosh, you know, I usually do that and I forgot. Or, you know, that's a really good idea. And I just remember it for the next time and move on. I think, you know, when I've had a couple of rejections in a row and I have to pull myself back up, I think to myself, you know what? This is just meant to be. And now I have room for bigger and better.
Was there ever a period, you know, you talked about the rental market when you were really struggling. Did you ever think, oh, maybe this is just not for me? I need to go back to working behind bars and auditioning for TV soaps and that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, it wasn't necessarily that I wanted to go back to acting. I really enjoyed it, and I was lucky enough to have been, you know, fairly successful with it. But yeah, there were definitely times when I was like, you know what, maybe I need a salary, or me, you know, because I went into real estate from acting, and my parents were like, oh great, another commission-based job. That's smart, Kelly. You know, so but look, with commission-based jobs, the sky's the limit. And that's the nice thing, you're not capped. So there were definitely times in the, when I was doing the rentals when I thought that. And that's why I went and I just said, you know what, I need to be somebody's assistant and learn the sales ropes and get my foot in the door and build my business that way. That's what I did.
Yeah. And I suppose in those early days, you just have to kind of keep your eyes on the prize. I mean, were there any times when you really thought, you know, you woke up in the morning and you thought, this is just hopeless? You know, what is the point of even, you know, how do you deal with that kind of mindset when you're facing another day, you've had a run of bad luck and you need to keep going somehow?
You know, I don't know if I've ever felt completely hopeless. I've definitely had my moments. You know, I just try to be grateful for something that I do have and it puts me in a better mood.
Yeah.
You know, there are definitely times when I've just had, you know, woken up and been like, oh God, I got to go to work today. I've got to deal with this person or that thing or this problem, put out this fire. And it's just, you want to curl back up and go back to sleep, right? But I cannot do that because I have two dogs. But otherwise, you know, so I have to get out of bed and get them outside. But yeah, I've found, and this took a long time to learn, but I've found that gratitude is really powerful. So if you get up and you're having a bad morning, if you just start thinking about the things that you're grateful for and you look back and you think about the things that you have accomplished, it just puts you in a better, more positive and more motivated mindset.
Yeah. It's interesting. I wrote a book a few years ago about my own kind of struggles with finding, it turned into a bit of a self-help book, but kind of my own struggles of finding out how this thing called life is supposed to work. And I just recall writing my CV, my resume for when I was looking for jobs. And I started off writing my resume and I was thinking, oh, I'm never going to get any jobs. But by the time I'd finished writing it, and I'd gone through all my accomplishments through my career, I was feeling really pretty good about myself. And I suppose there's a little bit of that in that kind of gratitude practice as well.
Yeah, for sure. I would like to read your book.
Oh, well, I'll send you a copy if you like. No problem.
Thank you. I would love that. Can you sign it for me?
Yeah, of course. I'm just grateful that anyone will kind of take an interest and read it, but I'll be glad to send one to you. No problem at all.
Thank you.
You know, if anyone listening to this would like a copy, they're welcome to buy it wherever they like. But as well, you talked earlier on about marketing and how you love marketing. And I think for someone, I'm a bit of a, I suppose you might call me an extroverted introvert. So okay. On the outside, I might seem kind of sometimes quite buoyant and quite out there. But actually, there's a part of me that really shrinks away when I have to face the day sometimes or face dealing with people. And I just want to be left alone. Yeah. But you love marketing. How, if from a kind of introvert's point of view, you know, how does that work? How can you kind of go out there and you know, sell, whether that's selling yourself or selling a service, your business, whatever it is?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, you know, I'm similar to you in the sense that I seem extroverted, but a lot of times I just love my alone time. And sometimes I don't want to be in a crowd of people, you know, putting my game face on. So I get that 100%. I tend to be a little bit of a homebody, but I force myself to go out with my friends and, you know, make a night of it or go to a networking event. As far as marketing is concerned, I think it's the creativity aspect of it that I like. So, you know, I like doing things out of the box and I like being able to succeed by doing things out of the box. So I think that's a motivating factor for me. It's just if I can do something that's different and do it well. And of course, there have been many times when I've done something different and it's not worked and I've learned and had to adjust. But I find that, you know, everybody tends to have the same spiel, especially in my industry, and you have to differentiate yourself. And so I think, you know, a lot of it comes down to trial and error, but I found a few ways to do things that other people, at least that I know of, aren't doing. And it's worked and it's exciting and it's fun to be creative. I still have that creative gene from when I was in the entertainment industry. So it's a way for me to tap into that.
I mean, you do have a large following across the media. You write articles for various publications. Your kind of social media is very, very strong. Is there a sense that your marketing, you kind of sometimes have to step into a persona? You know, all the other guys are coming out with the same spiel, but you have to kind of become this person that perhaps you might not be when you get home to your dogs and you kind of relax for the evening.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, sometimes, you know, I get from a girl who kind of consults with me on social media sometimes, oh, Kelly, you haven't posted in a week. Like, you have to be posting every single day and you have to post pictures of yourself. And, you know, sometimes there's a week where I have a pimple or something and I don't want anybody to take a picture of me. And you know what I mean? It's just, so yeah, I feel like a lot of times there's this, you know, feeling that you need to be perfect or you need to be at your best to be in front of people. But what I've actually found is that people really want you to be real, and people connect with you when you're not perfect, because nobody's perfect and nobody wants to be friends with somebody who's perfect, because it's annoying and intimidating. And you know, I think that, you know, when you have a moment of failure or a stressful day or something, you know, sometimes I'll write about that on my social media, and I tend to get more engagement when I'm just talking about this really difficult deal that I'm doing, or, you know, something crazy that happened, you know, and I have plenty of stories. But yeah, you know, I do feel that way many times, but then I have to remind myself that, you know, people, especially in my business, they want to work with a human being who understands their needs and is on their level.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, do you struggle with that authenticity? I mean, you know, from your acting career, do you ever find yourself kind of falling into a kind of artificial version of yourself just because you're on autopilot that day, or maybe you're finding someone really hard to win over? Do you ever kind of think, I need to notch it up a gear and become someone who's a little bit different to who I am?
There are definitely days when I have to force myself to be more extroverted and, you know, put a big smile on my face, you know, whether I've had some bad news in my personal life or, you know, a friend is going through something, you know what I mean? But the acting training that I went through was all about authenticity. So it was the Meisner method. And it's basically, they talk about living truthfully under imaginary circumstances. So you always want to be authentic. So, and if you're not authentic, it really shows in acting. So, and that can also be dangerous if you're not right mentally, because you have to basically mess with yourself to believe what's going on and act truthfully, react truthfully. And it's also all about taking off of another person. So really listening and feeling and empathizing with other people. So I don't find it difficult in that sense. There's no really reverting to an inauthentic place, but there are definitely times when I have to put my game face on and be, you know, more happy and excitable than I'm feeling at the time.
I mean, is that something that comes with practice? I mean, you've spent the time, you've done the work, you've built, you know, yourself up from being someone in the rental market, then someone's assistant, then someone else's assistant. And then, you know, you've probably got an awful lot of experience. You've probably fallen down and made, you know, terrible errors along the way to learn, you know, as you've learned. Do you know when you need to step it up and when you need to tone it down and when you need to kind of just be a bit more sensitive to the situation, perhaps?
Yeah, I think I have a good intuition for the most part. I mean, nobody is going to be right 100% of the time. It's certainly not me, but I think especially my acting training has helped me to be really intuitive and in tune with other people and their wants and needs. And in fact, my favorite negotiation coach is Chris Voss. I don't know if you've heard of him.
The name rings a bell, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. He is a former top FBI hostage negotiator, and he approaches every single negotiation from a place of empathy, which works so well in real estate, especially residential real estate, because you're dealing with an emotional purchase, an emotional sale in 90% of the time. So, you know, I think when you're dealing with a real estate negotiation, it's not that one person wins and one person loses. It's that everybody wins a little bit and everybody loses a little bit because everybody gives up a little something, right? For the most part. And I like to approach every negotiation from a place of empathy because of that.
How much is it about kind of working together? So often when we talk about business and we talk about even the way we kind of interact with other people, with nature, all this kind of stuff, there's almost like a kind of transaction going on. So it's like, mm-hmm. you know, I give you something, then therefore you owe me something. And it's almost like, who's going to get the, you know, it's almost like a battle, you know, and we do this with nature. It's like, I must master nature in order for it to give me what I want, you know, give me, you know, the crops that I need or the fossil fuels or whatever it is.
Right.
But some of the conversations I've been having lately is much more about working with people, working with nature as a kind of partner. And it seems to be a much better way of kind of getting what you need from, you know, your farming practices, that kind of thing. But also in terms of relationships, you're working with people as opposed to kind of going into battle with someone. You know, you want to charge this much, they only want to pay this much, and let the battle commence, you know.
Yeah.
But when you come together to work together, is that a much more kind of symbiotic process to selling, if you like?
You know, I try to kind of guide it in that direction. You can't control everybody, and you're dealing with all sorts of characters. You know, but I try to negotiate in a way that brings people together where everybody's giving a little bit. And, you know, I many times, for example, I will have my buyers write the cheesy love letter to the seller when they're making an offer. And they do, they think it's cheesy, but we make it so that it's just really nice. You want to tug at the heartstrings a little bit. And I think that, you know, it needs to be genuine. You don't want to write anything that's so over the top that's just sounds fake and desperate. But you want to be genuinely, you know, appreciative of what they've done with the property or their space that they've lived in or owned. And also give a little bit about yourself and how you might see yourself in that space living and, you know, growing a family or what have you. And that usually starts things off on a really nice foot because then the seller and the buyer feel a personal connection to one another and they're much more willing to be malleable.
It's really interesting. Maya Angelou, she said, you know, people won't remember what you said. They won't remember what you did, but they will remember how you made them feel.
Yep.
You know, and that's such a powerful thing. And I guess we see it a lot in advertising and we see it a lot in, you know, marketing and in politics as well. You know, they're trying to frighten people into voting for them and not the other guy. You know, all the time we're kind of having our heartstrings tugged, our emotions kind of played with a little bit.
Yeah.
In terms of your marketing, how much of that means, you know, obviously you're taking out ads in the media, you're doing a lot of kind of traditional advertising and all that kind of stuff. But how much of your marketing has to come down to you and you as a emotional human being, sort of there being vulnerable, being you?
It depends. I mean, not a lot of it, but I do have events from time to time, you know, not as many as of late because of COVID and whatnot, but one of the things that I do a little bit differently is I have an event at the property, not just a broker's open, but an event where I invite all the neighbors in the building to come to the apartment. I invite all the neighbors in the surrounding buildings. I invite people who might be renting something for more than what you could own this for. That's a similar space. And I also list it as a public open house at the same time. I always have a giveaway. I give away a piece of art that's a really nice piece of art or something, nice bottle of wine or something. And, you know, I also invite my past clients. So it does quite a few things. Number one, having a lot of bodies in the space. Look, people are always curious about their neighbor's apartment, right? So, and they want free wine and cheese, so they're going to come. Or donuts and coffee, depending on the time of day. And, you know, then there are the past clients who like to come and have the same thing. They've been to events before and they like them and whatnot. Sometimes we have live music. And then there are the people that come from the public who think it's just an open house. They come in, there's nice music playing, there's wine, they get comfortable, they can have a seat. They see all of these other people there and they don't necessarily know that they're the neighbors who are just looky-loos or what have you. And it creates a little bit of healthy competition where they come into the space, they see all these bodies and, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to make an offer because everybody wants what everybody wants. And also, you know, they see a bunch of people in the space, they want to do that. Yeah, that's one thing. The other thing is when your clients come, they tend to talk to people about their experience with you. So it's a good way to mingle, make a little speech, give back to people in a way. And also you meet other people in the building and surrounding buildings. Maybe they're looking to sell at some point. They see how you're doing things differently. So it's a lot of different things wrapped into one. That's just one of the things that I do a little bit differently. And I spend money on it, but it works.
Yeah.
I've had properties that have had one offer on them total. And it just happened to be above the asking price because the people came to one of these events and they were like, oh my goodness, I need to make an offer. It needs to be strong.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a little bit of kind of community going on. There's psychology, you've got emotional play going on. And it's like a combination of all these things, trying to make people feel good, but have that little kind of friendly competition as well.
Yeah.
Is that you talked about, you know, you have to spend a little bit of money on these things. And you also talked earlier on about having to kind of, you know, bite the bullet and hire an assistant. And, you know, it was a big leap. It was an expensive leap, but it was one that kind of paid for itself over and over. And I've often heard, you know, people saying, you know, pay whatever you can to get the right tools for the job. Do we, you know, even though it is investing in yourself and it's investing in your business, it's quite a risky, or it feels quite a risky move. Is it essential to take big leaps in order to kind of, you know, evolve ourselves and progress ourselves to new levels?
Yes, I think so. I'm not a gambler per se. I'm okay at blackjack, but that's about it. But I'm not frivolous, but when it comes to business, time is money, especially when you're on commission. And you need your time to do what you're good at and not be doing paperwork and managing calendars and managing inquiries and purchase applications and whatnot. You need somebody to do that. And once you take that leap, you have so much more time to do what you're best at and you can make 10 times what you're paying.
Yeah.
I think it's incredibly important. I think it's always good to take risks, calculated risks, but risks.
So even though you take a leap, there's always the opportunity to step back if it doesn't quite work out or doesn't
kind yeah.
of go right.
And I tend to research my leaps.
Yeah.
But, obviously. You know, but yes, I think it's very important.
Was there ever a time where you were building your business up and you thought this is too big for me? It's too much responsibility. I'm not ever going to be up there with those other people doing this kind of work. I'm afraid.
Yeah. I mean, I still feel that way sometimes, right? I have my moments just like everybody else, but I've was just brought up to never give up. My dad always used to say quitters never win and win, you know? And winners never quit. And so for me, quitting is failing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I suppose I mean, there is one of the things I always kind of struggled with was the fear of failure was so strong that I wouldn't try in the first place because then I would never, you know, I couldn't fail if I didn't actually try, but then it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. Did you ever think about that with your acting or with your, you know, when you were going through the rental business or anything like that? Maybe actually this is too big for me. So maybe if I just shrink down a little bit and make myself smaller and not try.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely when I first started acting, well, I would say when I started growing up and I was acting, because when I was little, I had no fear. But when I was, you know, in my, you know, preteens and teens, you know, you become so self-conscious, you know, your body's going through changes, you're going through changes emotionally, physically. So yeah, for sure. And then the rental business, yes. I mean, it was so hard. It's that part of the industry is such a rat race. And it's mainly people who are brand new to the industry. So there's not a lot of professionals or seasoned professionals anyway. And everybody's, you know, grasping at straws, trying to, you know, make breadcrumbs. And and so, yeah, that was tough. And I definitely felt like I wanted to quit at times. But instead of quitting, I just pivoted.
Yeah. What do you think have been the biggest lessons you've learned, maybe about yourself or about kind of building up something of your own as you've been going through this journey?
So, I've learned kind of what we talked about before, that I'm like you in the sense that I'm an introvert and an extrovert at the same time. And sometimes I need to push myself to be more extroverted to reach my goals. And I've also found that, you know, I'm so empathetic. I'm such an empath that sometimes I give people too much of a chance. And in the past, I've taken on listings that were overpriced, or, you know, clients that were unrealistic or didn't treat me well, or just, like, you know, downright verbally abused me. And I thought, okay, well, this is just comes with the territory and I have to put up with this. But I realized that, you know, there's so much more time to go bigger and better if you don't take on those types of clients and you maintain your self-respect and dignity, and you're a happier person in general. So yeah, maybe you lose one deal, but maybe you gain two with realistic people who are ready to go, or who don't abuse you. And I've learned not to take the abuse, and not to give everybody a second chance or even a first chance. As far as my team members are concerned, I used to hire everybody and anybody who I thought was a nice person. And I used to give people so many chances. And it got to the point where everybody was kind of like relying on mommy to feed them. And you really want a team that produces on their own as well, right? Like, you help them, I give them leads, they're, you know, I mentor them. That's what they're there for. But if they're just sitting around with their hands out, even though they're a nice person, you know, you need to make it a tough decision. And letting people go is one of the hardest things to do. And it's extremely hard for me to do. But I found once I've learned how to do it, or you know, hire slowly instead of hiring quickly, the team has just gotten so much stronger and better and happier. Everybody on the team is happier when everybody's producing, because nobody feels like they're pulling the weight for somebody else.
Do you find that, like, you know, in order to make these decisions, to, you know, to set these boundaries and to not take any nonsense from, you know, presumably in this business, you're dealing with some very successful, confident, and people who don't hold their words back and are quite open to telling people when they're not happy, for example. Do you ever get into a kind of situation where you have to say to myself, right, I'm going to own the day today, I'm going to set those boundaries, and I'm going to, you know, take the decisions, and make yourself big before you step into the day, almost? Are you still there? I think I may have lost you. I think the connection. How was this? Oh. Oh, there we
Okay,
go.
we're
Yeah,
back.
lost you there for a minute.
I missed what you said. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. I can start again. But do you ever find when you're going into a day and you're having to set boundaries, you're having to deal with potentially difficult clients that you're going to have to be quite firm with, or you might have to make a difficult decision with your team, that sort of thing, that you have to kind of say to yourself, right, I'm gonna own this day. I'm gonna, take control of this situation and, take over what's going here. I'm not going to allow it to own me, but I'm going to step up and take charge of what's going on.
Oh yeah, I mean there are times when I just want to avoid it altogether, but yeah, I have to have a talk with myself for sure.
And what does that look like? Is there, I've heard of people when they, senior management types who, when they're, about to go to work, they stand in front of the mirror and they make themselves look as big as possible. Or they give themselves a kind of pep talk and recite mantras and affirmations and that kind of thing. Does it come easily to you, or is it something you have to kind of take yourself off to do to kind of embody?
I've never gone in front of the mirror or used mantras or I've definitely given myself a private little pep talk. I think, I just start to think of all of the pros and cons over again. And when I want to avoid a situation like that, I just remind myself that it's going to be better once I've handled it. And sometimes I'll just sit down and write a few notes about how I'm going to handle it. And these are my talking points and these are the reasons why. And, if I have to let somebody go, for example, I will also write down, all of their good qualities, and I will make sure to tell them what those qualities are that I think are good at the same time. Because I don't ever want to make somebody else feel like they failed. It's just maybe not the right fit.
Absolutely. So there's that empathy and that compassion again, which is actually a powerful tool, even when you're in these kind of quite difficult situations. Do you plan ahead? I mean, you're in a very kind of successful position now, but it hasn't been that way. Was there a kind of very formal plan, or was it let's try the next thing and see what happens, or let's try the next thing and see what happens?
It was a little bit of both. So, I would always sit down with my manager and go over my business plan for the year in January or in December before the next year started. But in my business, it's such a fast-paced environment, then you have to be on your toes and you have to pivot quickly. And sometimes you don't have too much time to plan. So, it's I'm always learning, I'm always coaching, and I'm always working in my CRM and making goals for myself, but at the same time, there are a lot of things that happen off the cuff.
Yeah. Do you find that you have to kind of maintain a kind of level of energy or look after yourself so that you can be kind of quick with the decisions or the reactions and that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Because I can imagine if you go to too many of the kind of open wine evenings and that kind of thing, the open house sort of events with lots of wine floating around, it can dull your senses a little bit if you're not careful.
Oh, for sure. And I usually will limit myself to one glass and, let everybody else enjoy themselves. I try not to drink too much in a business environment. or in general, I don't like waking up feeling, tired and foggy. So, but yeah, I mean, I do love a good glass of wine. And yes, if I did that every night, it would be a problem. But that's something that we do once or twice during the life of a listing. So
I
it's
know.
only once a month or twice a month.
I know that some people that will kind of actively work on their kind of general well-being. They'll drink a lot of water, get as much sleep as they can, because it makes them much more capable when it comes to making decisions and
Yeah.
kind of, stepping up when it's required. Do you have any kind of rituals that you kind of or kind of lifestyle practices that help you be a good business person?
Yeah, I always feel like I'm more on point and on my game when I've had a good workout in the morning. I work out with a trainer 2 to 3 times a week, and then I work out on my own the rest of the time. I also really enjoy taking my dogs to the park in the morning. It's just a great time to think and get some fresh air and also get some exercise and kind of organize my day in my head.
It must be tempting when you're working for yourself to work every hour that God sends, but carving out time to kind of, work out and that kind of thing, do you see it as kind of an investment again in the business almost?
I've never thought of it that way, but I guess you could say it is because I definitely, when you boost your endorphins in that way, you definitely perform at a higher level.
Yeah, fantastic.
So
So kind of,
yeah.
so a healthy you helps to create a healthy business.
Yes, and I've always been a healthy eater for the most part. I was a vegetarian for 30 years of my life, and then I started dabbling in steak, meatballs, and bacon, which is not what most vegetarians usually start with, but that's me. And I still stick to a mainly plant-based diet. It's only once in a while. And then just 2 months ago, I found out that I'm celiac. So now I have to be gluten-free. So, and I'm allergic to fish. So, but so I try to eat super healthy, and now I have to eat even healthier. And I always just feel better when I'm, and I don't feel weighted down by, processed foods and whatnot. And I do try to drink a lot of water. I feel like that gives me more energy.
Yeah, it's funny. I think a lot of people see life as being very compartmentalized. So over here you have your health and fitness and well-being. Over here you have your professional life. Over here you might have your kind of spiritual life, whatever that looks like, whether you're religious or not. But actually, they all feed into each other and they all kind of enmesh. And
Yeah.
you can be a millionaire, but if you're got diabetes and you're having heart attacks, that doesn't necessarily make you a successful person.
No.
You've got to look after all of these different aspects, and they all feed into this kind of, general, just overall kind of life wellness, I think.
Absolutely. In fact, if I have the time in between appointments in the city, New York City is such a walkable city, and I love that about it. In between appointments, I rarely wear heels anymore to work, and so I'll try to walk and do my calls that I have to make in between appointments on my walks to different apartments. And it's just so nice to get some fresh air when it's not freezing or raining or 1,000 degrees, because we all know New York weather is, can be a little
Absolutely. It's a I spent a year or so living in New York earlier in my
Oh, did you?
career, and I remember standing in the doorway of a McDonald's eating a Big Mac, and looking to my left I could see another McDonald's, and looking to my
Yeah.
right I could see another McDonald's, and there were just McDonald's in every area. It's
It's
a
like Starbucks
oh yeah, and Starbucks and
now.
yeah, everything like that. And it's do you find it I'm very much about getting into nature because I think that helps us get back to our nature, and it's a kind of unprocessed relationship.
Yeah.
We have all our processed foods, we have our kind of processed diet of information that we're getting from the TV or from the internet all the time. Do you find that living in New York can be just kind of stressful in itself, and it you have to kind of go to really take it on as a kind of challenge almost to maintain your balance and your health and well-being in such a kind of man-made space.
I think New York can be stressful, at least for me, in the sense that you need to make a lot of money to live comfortably here. But as far as, and it can be noisy, and sometimes, there's a, 5-alarm fire, and you've got a million fire trucks going by, and or somebody's doing work in the apartment next door, and you're trying to work, and there's jackhammering. But for the most part, I personally feed off the energy of the city. I love the energy of the city, and I love that you can get anything delivered at any time. You know what I mean? And then you can walk out your door and get whatever you need within a couple of blocks. You've done all of your errands for the day, and you can walk and do it for the most part. So I personally love the energy of the city. I also spend a lot of time in South Beach, but and I go out to Connecticut to visit family quite a bit, but there's only so much time that I can spend in a quiet area before I'm like itching to get back to the energy of New York City and the culture and everything it has to offer.
Do you think that kind of energy is something that kind of feeds into your professional life, and it keeps you kind of buzzing and going and marketing and building those relationships with clients and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Because I think that, you know, different aspects of life appeal to different people, depending on what your kind of constitution is, if you like.
Yeah.
And you have to find your energy from somewhere, otherwise your energy really dips down. And for some people, that's about getting quiet and about getting, you know, finding solitude and peace and quiet and going off into the woods or whatever it might be. But for other people, they really need that buzz. Could you be a successful real estate mogul, you know, out in New England or New Hampshire or somewhere where it's much more rural and much quieter? Do you think you'd be able to build your empire out there?
I think I could. I'd have to learn a lot about houses. I mean, I know I sell some townhouses here, but, you know, I don't know the first thing about, you know, inspecting a pool. So, you know what I mean? It's so much different when you're dealing with the apartments and condos than it is when you're dealing with houses that have a lot of land. Even townhouses here, you're not dealing with a lot of land and you're not dealing with easements and stuff like that. But I think I could learn quickly. Is it something I would want to do? I don't know. I am working on expanding my team down to South Beach and Miami in general. I don't think I'm going to be showing homes there, but I do have a lot of clients that are back and forth and it just makes sense. So, you know, we'll see. Maybe I'll run around a little bit down there and see what it's like to sell houses instead of apartments.
You don't think it will be too quiet for you? It wouldn't have that same kind of buzz and energy that you need to keep you energized?
I mean, the good thing about South Beach is that Miami is that it's still a city, right? And you just have the beautiful weather and the beach, and it's just a little bit slower paced life. So I don't get too bored there. Yeah. I get bored out in the suburbs where there's, you know, a bowling alley and, you know, a pub and that's it. You know what I mean? And I like doing, I like going out into the quiet areas, but I have like a time limit.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think I would get bored in Miami. No, but I think I would still need to be, I don't think I would do it in Miami, Miami. Yeah. I think I would still need to be involved in New York City.
If you could go back to when you first made that decision to kind of maybe step away from the acting life, go back knowing what you know now about the industry, your experiences, what advice would you give yourself back to the kind of younger, more impressionable you?
Oh, man. I think I would have taken more risks then. I think I would have said, you know, you need the confidence to take more risks then.
Yeah.
Because I think I would have gone further if I'd been more confident in my ability to take risks and use my intuition.
Do you think that's something that stands in the way of most people when they're entering a new kind of life or, you know, exploring a new possibility? It's not that, you know, the opportunities aren't there for them. It's just that they're not confident enough to kind of say, actually, let's just go for it.
Yeah. I mean, it can be really scary, right? I mean, depending on what it is, you know, whether it's quitting your job that you've had for 20 years where you have a salary and health benefits and you can budget properly every year, whether it's something like that, or, you know, picking up and moving to a new place where you don't know anybody and you have to start a whole new life. I mean, those things are really scary. So I get it, but you know, there's that saying that everybody knows, you miss 100% of the opportunities you don't take, right? So what if, I think if, for me anyway, what if is scarier.
Yeah, absolutely. They talk about Babe Ruth and he has this amazing kind of score of home runs, but nobody actually talks about, he's also the record holder for the being struck out the most times, mm-hmm. and everything else, you know, and it's those kind of failures. You have to kind of see them as part of the growth process.
Yeah.
Was moving to New York and I had a lot of money to spend and I wanted to find out more about you and your business and maybe hire you to you know, find me a place to live, how could I find out more about you and your business? Where could I go?
Well, I have an Instagram account, Kelly Robinson New York, spelled out. And I can be reached on my email address, which is Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y dot Robinson, R-O-B-I-N-S-O-N at compass.com. I work for Compass Real Estate.
Fantastic. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for that. That's really inspiring. I feel like, you know, I want to get out there and start building something now, building something, you know, something bigger than me that will light me up and, you know, give me something to kind of get my teeth into going forward. So I really appreciate your time today. So thank you for that.
I appreciate yours. And it seems like you've done it already with what you're doing.
Well, I just do what I enjoy. And I enjoy conversations like this because I started this because I kind of felt like I didn't know what I was doing with my life. I didn't have a clue. So I thought I would start speaking to people who seemed like they had a few of the answers or they'd figured a few things out. And that's why I enjoy conversations like this, because it's just inspiring that half of it is knowing what to do. And the other half is just taking a chance and being brave and having the courage and, yeah, you know, finding that motivation to just try things, you know, yeah, and see what works.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
So there you go. There was some encouraging words there from the amazing Kelly Robinson. Best place to find her is Instagram, where she is at Kelly Robinson New York. And hopefully we can all take a little bit of encouragement from that, a little bit of inspiration, that just keep on turning up, keep on learning the ropes, finding your way, and eventually you know, you get to own the landscape that you're operating in. All right, so like I said before, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Head over to conversationsonliving.com, where you've got all of the other episodes, and there's my writings are on there. I've got some meditations as well, and there's our monthly newsletter that you can sign up to, and you also get a little free download as well if you do that. And if you want to carry on the conversation, head over to our Facebook group, and that is at Conversations on Living. Just search for it and sign up and you can join the conversation. It's a little bit quiet there at the moment, if I'm completely honest, so get in there and get the conversation started. All right, next week we are talking to Christina Crook. This is a conversation that should have happened a week ago, but it's been a turbulent start to the year. I've had COVID, we had terrible power outages here caused by storms, and just schedules have been all over the place. So I'm really excited about finally catching up with Christina Crook, and this is going to be all about the joy of missing out, and it's going to be a really good one. So don't forget to stay tuned, and if you don't want to miss it, just subscribe and it'll pop up automatically in whatever app you're using. All right, and in the meantime, have a lovely day.